Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Episode 263 of the Roguecast, recorded July 30th, 2019. Tom Hanks hunts the most dangerous game.
We're back.
Nice.
2 weeks in a row.
You know, this for some people who might have been tuning in, this will be their second podcast, yes. Even though for us it's like podcast 1,700 or whatever.
263.
I was in the ballpark.
But if you added an old podcast that we used to do together.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. People don't know, but we once did a podcast called Comic Pants.
That's true.
And long may it be remembered.
And so what you're saying is we have done the Action Comics or Detective Comics that were renumbered. We're going to put all the numbers of every podcast we've ever done together and eventually have number 1,000.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll be repackaged with hologram covers at some point.
I want foil. Can we have foil?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you want, Nick.
Yes.
So let's jump right into the... We still have a backup of news from last week.
Yeah. San Diego and other stuff. There's just been a pile up of news.
And I'm going to guess we won't get to everything this week either.
All right. Well, let's do what we can.
Let's start with trailers because there have been a lot of trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start talking about Jumanji The Next Level, the Jumanji sequel.
Oh man, did we not get around to that one?
Nope. No. And this
Goodness
is a
gracious.
While back.
We are all fans of Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle here.
Yeah,
yes.
I didn't see it until it came to video. You guys told me how good it was, and I was like, how good could it be? Turns out, pretty good.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that we want to tell people that it's like maybe a great movie, but at what it's doing, it's a darn fun time.
I was going to say, it's a highly entertaining movie.
It is the Citizen Kane of movies in which people go into video games.
Here's a quick question. Have y'all... So I didn't watch the original Jumanji. Have y'all seen it?
Yes.
Yes.
Multiple
okay.
times.
Okay. Like it?
Yeah, I do.
It's good.
It's Robin Williams. It's Bonnie Hunt. It's got some fun
It didn't have
actors.
The... I mean, there's a very specific hook to Welcome to the Jungle, which is that kids get pulled into this world, which is now a video game and you know, like actually like a 90s video game.
Yep.
Sort of like in a... What would maybe be like a... Oh, not a point-and-click adventure, but like an action game, but with different characters you could choose from.
Yeah.
It just like an amalgamation of a couple different types of games, it seems like. And the kids end up playing characters with avatars that play against their type.
Yes.
So the nerdy kid ends up in The Rock's body, the hot chick ends up in Jack Black's body,
yep.
and so on.
Yep.
And hijinks ensue, and then they form a true friendship and all that stuff.
Yep.
And it sounds very trite, but it's a great ride.
And they defeat Bobby Cannavale, who is the evil
yes.
bad guy.
There are so many super fun scenes in there from... who's the guy who's the British or the New Zealand
Jumanji.
Guy?
Yeah, it's the guy from Flight of the Conchords, whose name I'm blanking.
The guy from Flight of the Conchords who plays their manager.
Yep.
He plays the NPC who gives them exposition,
yep.
and they realize he's an NPC when he keeps repeating himself and
yep.
not able to answer certain questions.
Yep.
There's just lots of fun, clever stuff in it, and a few weirdly adult jokes in there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I think it was PG-13?
I think it was.
All right, so let's jump to the sequel to that. It's still running with the same sort of premise,
yeah.
but you've got...
Well, it looks like one of the kids... the kids have not stayed, like, close friends.
Uh-huh.
It looks like one of the kids has gotten the game again and is sort of messing with it because he's...
And they think he went back in because his life is not so great.
Right.
But it turns out, and this is not a spoiler, it's in the trailer, that his the grandfather's actually went in, played by... Danny Glover
and
Danny DeVito. And so it's Danny DeVito is the Rock character and Kevin Hart is Danny Glover. And
yeah.
they get to play instead of playing teenagers in their adult bodies, they're playing old men in their adult bodies.
Yep.
And also they swap, I believe, doesn't the basketball player dude
ends up in Jack Black.
In Jack Black, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a few, and we don't know what happened to Spencer, our lead
Correct.
Character. So
who ends up in Karen Gillan's?
They're both the same.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, not the same.
But the same
the cheerleader.
Kid.
The cheerleader winds up in Kevin Hart's body, I think. No. Where does she wind up?
I don't know. We don't know.
Okay.
So there's a few mysteries there.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Now, this is a little bit more the same, but they've got a twist on it. And honestly, because the previous one was so fun,
yeah.
I'm completely down with it.
I'm seeing this just because Danny DeVito's in it, regardless. I was going to see it regardless, but that's like icing on the cake.
It looks like a ton of fun. And I really like the first one, so I'll probably see this one in the theater.
Yeah. People, if you hadn't seen the previous one, it's a good time. And you don't need to have seen the original Jumanji. You can be like me and just wander in on the Welcome to the Jungle.
It's true. Then there's another sequel that was long-awaited, Zombieland Double Tap.
Boo! Dave,
I believe you're a doubter on this.
I'm a little bit of a doubter after that trailer as well.
I'm so in.
It's no sequel to Welcome to the Jungle, I'll tell you that.
I mean, I love that the entire cast is coming back, and I actually do think they're all strong in it. I don't know if I needed to see more of this world. I thought the first one was fine.
Oh, but the thing is, like, there's perfect continuation because nothing got solved. It was still a zombie land.
Right. Yeah, I mean...
Let's just real quick talk. The original one was sort of a combination of weirdos and normal people trying to survive in a zombie world, highlighted by, was it Michael Cera or fake Michael Cera?
It's fake Michael Cera.
It's Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg.
He's actually the better of the two.
That's true. By his breakdown of the rules of living in zombie land, which even like appeared on the screen as like big kind of fonts and stuff like that, as he kind of walked you through survival.
And it was very tongue-in-cheek and humorous.
Well, you gotta remember, guys, this was originally going to be a TV show.
Oh, no, I remember. I remember that trailer.
And so, to me, doing a sequel makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, so here's the thing. I'm actually perfectly on board with the idea of a sequel. I wasn't engaged with the trailer. Yeah, I thought it was okay. And I'm actually not even necessarily that down on it, though, because what I remember is I wasn't super big on the trailer for the original Zombieland.
Yeah.
Now, and I also was not as won over as some people were, but I had a darn good time with it.
I really, really like Zombieland. I've watched it quite a few times, so I'm excited about them doing this. I hope they don't mess it up, but I thought it was a solid trailer. I'm curious to see where they go.
I'm hoping Woody Harrelson can sneak in a Carnage reference.
I'm hopeful he doesn't.
We're just hopeful to anybody, by the way, who hasn't seen Venom, which, by the way, of course, same director.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess the through line there is Woody Harrelson.
Is it David Leitch or no?
I don't know the name.
I think that might be right.
There was a little the end credits sequence teased Carnage for the next Venom movie with a hilariously ridiculous brief sequence with Woody Harrelson.
Sorry, that end joke has been going on all day. Therefore, it just kind of bleeds into the podcast.
Yeah, that worked out nicely. But anyway, I think I will probably somewhat wait to see what the reviews are, but there is a high likelihood I will see this, especially since I have the Alamo pass thing now, and I can just see as many Alamo movies as I want in a given
month. Lord it over all of us, Dave.
You'll get to it eventually. Yeah. They'll let anybody in the club after a while. But right now, it's just the elites.
This is not exactly a trailer, but there was a feature out of San Diego for Terminator Dark Fate.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see that, but I heard y'all say you liked it.
I think Nick and I are both on board.
Yeah, I think I am, like, 75% sure I'm going to see this in theaters.
They overtly say that only T2 and Terminator are in continuity.
Which I love.
Even though there's an older Schwarzenegger, they're gonna re-explain that.
I want them to explain how he survived the dip into the molten lava of the smelting plant.
But it looks really cool.
It does. And Linda Hamilton looks badass.
Yep.
I like that she is kind of taken to the protector role to this new girl.
Yeah.
And we have some sort of hybrid human / Terminator.
Yeah.
Because she's not a Terminator. She's not like, she's something else.
Yeah.
And we have a new type of...
Maybe it's bioorganic nanotech.
Well, it seems like there's two different Terminators for the bad side that they inhabit one body.
Oh, weird.
It's like one's an endoskeleton, one's the metal, and it kind of goes over it.
Sounds like some kind of 90s toy.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's part of me kind of like the nostalgic kid in me who saw T2 in theaters and is like, this is the most amazing movie in all the land.
I'm worried that it's...
And that still holds up a little
bit. I've been burned on two movies, and like badly. Horribly burned, scarred. I say this as someone, by the way, who liked Terminator 3 pretty well and really liked Sarah Connor Chronicles, so there has been exceptions, but I just don't know if I need more like trucks driving down roads with Terminators chasing after them or being in another vehicle.
Have you been scarred by Genesis that hardly?
Was that the last one?
Or was it Salvation was the Christian Bale Salvation, one, and Genesis was the...
Genesis hurt me more.
I didn't see either one of those.
I made you watch it up here at one
You watched
point.
Parts of it.
I've never seen it.
You watched enough to know.
No, I really didn't.
Oh, okay.
I like to torture myself, so I watched it, and it was very bad.
It's some rough stuff.
I didn't see any of it. Dave?
I only watched the trailer like once. I haven't seen the featurette. It looked pretty good. It's just that... I cannot. It's hard for me to get my enthusiasm back for really anything Terminator.
Dave, let me help you with your enthusiasm. Director of Deadpool.
Well, for those of you just joining the podcast who have not been listening for the previous 250-plus episodes, yep. I'm not a huge Deadpool fan.
Dave and I both hate Deadpool.
Well, Ryan Reynolds just teased his involvement in Phase 5, so...
No! I do not want Deadpool in the Marvel Universe.
Phase 5, what's that going to be, 20 years from now?
No, maybe I'll be dead by then. It's like 5 years from now.
Mostly could be dead by then.
Yeah.
The world's got some troubles.
Yeah, maybe I'll be dead. I won't have to see Deadpool in the Marvel Universe.
You don't want to see Deadpool interact with Captain Marvel?
I really don't. None of them.
You know how, like, honorable and amazing Captain America seems?
Yeah.
What if Deadpool comes up and farts on him?
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Deadpool can go play with Venom. How about that?
the Venom Deadpool verse?
Yeah, the Venom Deadpool verse is fine, whatever.
I'm predicting Blade Deadpool team up movie.
Oh, God. It's awful.
I can see them doing that because Blade would be the straight man and Deadpool would be the wacky man.
Yeah.
But let's not think about the end times. Let's just stick with what we know.
Yep.
Y'all committed to seeing the Terminator?
No, I need to see reviews.
Okay.
I'm more than likely.
I'm obviously a review sitter on this one. Believe me, I will check it out if it gets pretty good reviews.
Yeah, I would like it to be good. The trailers have me interested in a way I haven't been in quite a while.
The pedigree is there. Tim Miller I actually really like as a director.
Has he made anything else notable?
I think he has done something
else. He's done
some
other stuff.
And most of them have been hits. So I think he'll bring something interesting to this. James Cameron is returning...
As producer,
but I definitely feel like because
he's involved in the featurette.
He's on set and everything. Yeah.
Right. So let's all remember, what do we think of current James Cameron?
Well,
the master of Avatar and Titanic films.
Yep.
Did you see that thing floating around about Avatar? Is like he's still yet to make his second one, and the Marvel movies has made 22 movies.
That was pretty funny.
Yep.
I thought you were going to say he had announced more, because like, I know he was really thinking of
his announced, like, six,
as a trilogy, but yeah, I think he's like at times talked about like up to 6 or 9 films or something.
He's like, look, I'm just going to make Avatar movies until the end of my career, and there should be about 20 of them by the time 2020 rolls around.
I love the color blue.
Maybe they're all going to hit at once.
Yeah. Oh, God. Avatar movie every day.
Maybe they'll be webisode shorts.
2020, the year of the Avatar. There will be 365 Avatar movies released daily.
Oh, God. That is my worst... That's hell compared to having Deadpool in the... I will take Deadpool in the Marvel Universe a million times.
All right, let's cleanse the palate with some other news.
All right. Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans Go trailer. This was teased at the end of the Teen Titans Go to the Movies movie.
Yep.
This is a direct-to-video.
Yes, it is.
And it's basically going to be the Teen Titans of Glenn Murakami, the 90s version.
Right, that everyone loves.
Right, they kind of like semi-serious. Well, I mean, it's somewhat comedic, but definitely had the serious stuff. And then the very...
Comedic Teen Titans Go.
Comedic Teen Titans Go. I never watched much of the previous original one, so I don't have a close attachment, but I've seen enough to know it's really well made.
Yeah.
I see why people dig it. I have seen Teen Titans Go, and I think it's really funny. We've watched it at the store sometimes.
Yep.
And I think we all understand to some degree why the old school Teen Titans fans are not a big fans of Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, and I feel
they're
like
big whiny babies.
No, because they used all the design elements of it of the show that they love, but consistently like make fun of it.
I like
it
to push buttons.
It
on
is
that
like
one.
If they made my favorite TV show Terriers and brought it back as a goofy animated series.
Right,
I'd be super angry.
You'd still watch it.
I'd still watch it, but I'd be super angry about it.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a legit thing, and I feel
do you think
like,
they're just... Are they trolling the original fans, or are they going to get something out of this? Can you have any sort of seriousness when half the characters are there to make mockery of things?
I don't think they're trolling them, but I think that they don't understand what the original fans want. I think they're like, well, people are clamoring for them, let's bring them back and have them in this wacky movie, and I'm like... That is actually insult to injury. This is salt in the wound. I watched this trailer, and I thought... Wow, I cannot think of a thing that the Teen Titans fans want to see less than this.
because we've all enjoyed Teen Titans Go, I bet it's probably going to be pretty well done, at least from that perspective.
Well, see, I was not wowed by this trailer, and I like Teen Titans Go to the Movies quite a bit.
Yeah.
Did it lack the Michael Bolton song that the previous Titans Go to the Movies
it
had?
It did lack that, but I feel like it lacked the punch. It didn't feel like it had a lot to say.
Well, it's weird to like fuse together a semi-serious property and a completely wacky comedy and expect it to work.
Reveal all of your jokes either in that trailer.
And that's true, but I do remember thinking that there was pretty actually they seem to have more of the fart jokes in the Teen Titans Go to the Movie trailers, which I went because a friend made me go, and then I had a good time with it.
Yep.
And found that there was more to it, including weirdly dark humor, like the death of Aquaman, but because of like,
well, and also,
the plastic thing from a six pack killed him.
Yeah.
But also like the death of all the heroes' parents and things like that.
But like in the most bizarre ways conceivable, was it who was playing synthesizer on Krypton?
Oh God!
Was that like Beast Boy or something like that, or Cyborg? I think it was Cyborg.
Yeah.
While I think they were like distracting the Kryptonians so that they could like
save Krypton, and then they had to go back and travel back in time to destroy Krypton and kill everyone because
when they go back to redo all the origins, that was the darkest thing I've ever seen. Yes. Kids. When they
and yet completely comedic.
They shove Batman's mom down an alley and they put a pearl necklace on her to make her more of a tempting target. That is so dark.
Yeah,
it's so dark.
But it was as if it was delivered by like
the Marx Brothers.
The Marx Brothers. Yeah,
this is why I like Teen Titans Go better.
Yeah. Did you watch? Watch any of the other one?
No.
Oh, okay.
The thing is, my teenager really, really liked Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And they hate Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
And I think that's legit.
I know at least our former staffer, Roxy, was in that camp.
Well, the thing is, like, you can say, oh, well, you know, everything has a new iteration, and that's fine. But this was really, like, they took a lot of the designs, and they brought back this thing you love, and
they might even have some of the same voice actors. I can't remember. It's the
same voice actors.
It is. Yeah.
And then they made it a joke. It's like, that's insult to injury. That's cool. Yeah.
What I was hoping will come out of this, and maybe this will happen, is that because they at least brought those characters back, there's people who've animated them, that at the end of it, they'll go back to the separate universe, and that they will get like a direct-to-video movie or a miniseries or something like that, and survive again.
Yeah.
And then the people who loved the original one will sadly be beholden to the Teen Titans Go people for having brought back their show.
They might get a 10-episode series on, what, the HBO Extreme or whatever that streaming service that Warner Brothers...
HBO Extreme?
Isn't that what it's called?
I have no idea.
It's the Warner Brothers streaming service that is
DC
going to...
DC streaming
like,
is still going right at the moment, right?
Yeah, but it's
going to have cross things on both DC and the other one so people can have whichever streaming. I don't know how long that's going to last.
I'm sure DC app is not long for this world.
But, yeah... Nick, are you going to go see this movie? Or are you going to rent it, I guess?
I will rent it.
Okay.
Yes.
Speaking of weird reboots that are like 20 years old, Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Yep.
Okay, you guys are going to have to tell me about this. I didn't watch this trailer.
This is such a weird thing. I mean, I get it.
It actually makes complete sense for there to be a new Jay and Silent Bob movie. Is it actually a reboot, or are they kind of spoofing reboot
They're
ideas?
Calling it reboot.
Because I think what happens is, as in the original, when Jay and Silent Bob in the original find out a movie's being made about them, and they go to tell them what they got wrong.
Right, because they're making a Bluntman, they're adapting the Bluntman and Chronic comic into a movie. And it was like, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was the one that was full of all the meta gags and the universe, and I really liked that movie. It's super self-indulgent, but I really enjoyed it. This... even more self-indulgent. It is basically
they're stopping the reboot of their movie.
The reboot of the movie in the first place. And it's like all these actors are still in it. They're all a little bit too old to be playing themselves in this. It's a little bit embarrassing at this point.
Are the two girls picked up? Is one of those girls Kevin Smith's daughter?
I believe Harley Quinn Smith is in there. Yes.
Yeah. I will say that the trailer just wasn't very funny to me. Was my main issue?
I was kind of ready
to have fun with it.
Me too.
There's a lot of just the same jokes.
It just feels dated, and I feel like Kevin Smith's one of these guys who I think unfortunately is too close to the gatekeeper side of things, and I worry that he's going to have some really offensive shit in there.
Maybe. I just worry that it's just not going to be that funny.
Yeah.
That it'll be the yoga hosers of Jay and Silent Bob movies.
There's a lot of guys out there. I have a lot of friends who are super excited about this, who grew up on the Viewers Universe stuff. I really liked all their movies, but I don't think I'm going to see this.
Maybe this one will be super awesome.
Even
if you're
Clerks
high.
2?
No, Clerks 2 is where I checked out.
Yeah, Clerks 2 is not
Clerks
great.
2 is pretty bad, but I have friends who like it.
Clerks Animated Series, though. That was
Clerks cold. Animated Series.
Everybody liked Clerks Animated.
Yeah. The Kingsman trailer. This was weird. This is an odd thing to do.
Is this because
it's
a pre-Kingsman?
But it's a prequel.
It's a prequel.
Okay. So I haven't seen any of them. I'm told I might like it, and I think that might be true, but I just haven't seen them.
Yeah, I like... Now,
what's weird about a prequel to that series?
It's such a strange... I mean, I don't know. It's
about the creation of the Kingsman... organization.
In like World War One, right?
Yep, with Ralph Fiennes as the first Kingsman.
We're going to get like a period piece, crazy over the top action movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I think is interesting is that it's in the World War One, and like the Kingsman series has been very modern.
Yeah, that's true.
And very stylized. And to go back and do a World War One is kind of an unusual thing. I'm not against it, but yeah. I was not wowed by this trailer.
I thought it was a fun trailer. I watched it so long ago, I don't remember a lot what happened in it.
Is that a very rated R series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Language, I mean, and violence and stuff? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. There were lots of heads exploding in the first one.
I was really actually more curious about the language. I wasn't sure, because I thought it might just be a very violent James Bond thing, which does not usually have a lot of language, but is it like F.U. Blofeld?
No. It's actually pretty slick in what it's doing. It's not.
Do people say bad words?
But people do say bad words. I mean, Samuel Jackson was the villain in the first one.
Nice.
Yep.
Spoilers.
The second one. I mean, he's in there. I mean, come on. The second one was a lot of fun, if not maybe a little bit less than the first one, but it had a huge part played by Elton John. Playing himself,
okay,
which was fun.
About that, I've only seen that one once.
This one, I know they're going to do a third part of the trilogy.
So it is Matthew Vaughn directing.
Yeah, Matthew Vaughn is still directing this.
Still directing it,
But no Taron Egerton or no Colin Firth, I don't think. Unless Colin Firth might show up at the very end, I don't know.
But he'll be a baby.
He'll be
like, I'd like to talk to you about the Kingsman Initiative.
Yes,
he'll be a baby with an eye patch.
But. If you get Ralph Fiennes, I'm fine with that. I love Ralph Fiennes. So.
The cast is pretty good. Ralph Fiennes, Daniel Brühl.
That's right, Daniel Brühl.
Jamon Hasu, Stanley Tucci. Some good people in it.
It's Matthew Vaughn. He's another one of those directors that I pretty much see everything he does.
He's feeling pretty good, yep.
He brings a lot of energy to the movies that he makes. Yep. So I'm going to see this in theaters.
I will probably see it when you buy a digital copy of it.
No, because I no longer give you digital copies.
That's true. It's too R-rated to watch this story. I will probably see it if it comes on HBO when I have HBO.
Hard pass from me.
But you should watch the original one at some point, Dave. I actually think you like it.
I do think I should watch it at some point.
It is the best version of a Mark Miller book you will ever, or adaptation you will find.
Interesting. That's a not going to sell, Dave.
But I appreciate your truthfulness, Nick.
We've got a bunch of trailers, but I'm just going to go back-to-back with two more, and then we'll come back and cover more next week. With two that are completely incongruous. Let's talk about the Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood trailer.
Oh, yeah.
That is Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers, which I don't even get more perfect than that.
No.
I don't know that there's really a lot to say about this movie, other than it looks like a perfect exploration of this gentleman's sort of impact on the quiet and impact on the world and people around him.
I wasn't sure how they were going to do kind of like form the story of this.
Like the point of view character is a reporter who's doing a profile on him.
Which I thought was a great idea of it. And it, like you said, Tom Hanks is perfect.
Is this based on a true story?
I don't know.
Because I thought that like this journalist was like a real dude.
I think it might be.
I was hoping for a gritty Vietnam War story and Mr. Rogers learns how to kill.
But it looks like, I mean, you get him as Mr. Rogers, but you also get, it looks like they're using all of like the sets and like the puppets stuff like that. And I'm like, I have a lot of nostalgia for those things because I watched Mr. Rogers a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm going to see this one.
It does seem like pretty perfect casting. I mean, really pretty stunning. But yeah, the as a consequence, I don't really have anything to say on it. I never got around to the documentary they did, which I know was good.
It was good.
So I will probably try and catch that and probably try and catch this.
Are we in the spirit of being in the darkest timeline, are we at some point going to learn that Tom Hanks hunts humans for sport?
I hope so. That's a good tie into one of the trailers, which I don't know if it's
getting
bumped until next week.
That's the next thing I was going to talk about.
Oh, nice. You were setting it up.
I was setting it up.
I didn't mean to draw attention to it. Now it's meta, though.
I don't think Tom Hanks is hunting human beings, but I cannot be 100% sure.
You can't know that Tom Hanks does not hunt people for sport.
Probably, like, you know what I think? I think he still makes it comedic because, you know, he's got that comedy style. Yeah, yeah. So he's, like, using RPGs on people and stuff like that.
Tom Hanks in The Biggest, Most Dangerous Game.
What did he say in the SNL Halloween sketch?
Any questions?
Any questions? I'm Tom Hanks and I'm hunting people for sport. Any questions?
Any questions? Oh, man.
Okay, and the other trailer...
And the other trailer is called The Hunt. Yes. It is not about Tom Hanks hunting the most dangerous game.
No, but this is a Blumhouse production.
Yeah, and just in case people don't know, they're primarily a horror movie studio.
Yep.
But they've done everything from prestigious stuff like Get Out,
yep,
you know, like Oscar-winning type stuff,
to
lots of like sort of teen horror things, but like in between has been like The Conjuring, yep. I think it's The Conjuring?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Not Insidious, but The Conjuring.
Correct.
And
then, of course,
Some lighter, yeah, The Purge, some lighter weight stuff like, oh, what was the one I was, The Truth or Dare.
Yep.
But usually they're even on something like that, they're sort of a step above writing. And that the vibe I got out of this was update of the classic World's Most Dangerous Game, in
which
a rich person takes somebody to an island or something like that and hunts them for sport because they're evil rich bastards.
Yep.
But done with a group of people, done with some wit and flair and probably like a few little twists, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great trailer.
It's a fun trailer.
It is a really good trailer. And the cast is great. So Ethan Suplee, who was fantastic on Chance on Hulu.
Oh, yeah.
He's from Kevin Smith first. He's been...
Yes.
He was Willem.
He was Willem.
But he was also on the show with Jason Lee that was about the karmic lottery ticket.
Oh, right.
My Name is Earl.
My Name is Earl,
He was
yeah.
great on that. Ethan Suplee, and then he plays sort of this really dangerous guy on Chance
yep.
on Hulu. And so he's really branched
he's
out.
He's got range.
So he's like... He's one of the guys. Hilary Swank is the bad guy, it looks
yep.
like. The lead is Betty Gilpin from Glow.
Oh, right.
It looks like definitely these folks are going to be people who kind of find a way to fight back.
Yeah.
But it also looks like there's going to be, if I had to guess, this is going to play out a little bit like Battle Royale or those kind of movies
sure.
too, where there's going to be a high body count, there's going to be some characters you like to get killed.
Yep.
And it's going to be a little bit surprising and shocking throughout.
Well, if I'm remembering correctly in the credits of this, is Lindelof directing or is he...
So, no, this is written by Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuse, who I'm assuming is Carlton Cuse's son.
I would imagine.
And it's directed by Craig Zobel, who has worked with Damon Lindelof on Leftovers. He directed an episode of Westworld. He's directed some interesting TV stuff. He worked on an episode of Outcast, episode of American Gods, and some show called $1 that I believe I've never heard of.
that's the show from RoboCop. I like their use of the in the trailer of the old Marshall Tucker Band song "Can't You See?"
Just
another one of those. I don't know if it's going to be in the movie, but if nothing else, good for the trailer.
Yeah, this is there's a great cast, really good people behind the camera. I'm kind of excited about this now.
The movie was not even remotely on my radar, but it is absolutely one that I will watch with my Alamo Pass.
Dave's lording his Alamo Pass over me and Nick.
He is. But A24 has kind of cultivated this like market that most of the movies they make, I want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Blumhouse in general...
Blumhouse and...
Yeah, even their sort of middling efforts are almost always a good time. But did they also do Happy Death Day and stuff like
yes.
that? Yeah, there's like kind of a little bit of horror comedy in there sometimes. I like their stuff.
I do too.
All right. So real quick, we're going to cover a couple other bits of news that we have from San Diego, just that we hadn't got a chance to. Marvel had a bunch of announcements. There's a teaser for 2099.
Yep.
There's a teaser
for... That is Marvel 2099.
Yep, because it'll be 80 years until 2099. So
yep.
They're doing something of like... It's their 80th anniversary.
2019,
and
80 years from now, 80
years
is 2099.
So, crazy number math.
Oh, okay. Did you say an 80th anniversary of Marvel?
Is this year.
Is this year, and so they're... Okay.
They're saying
I mean,
80 years.
I don't quite see the connection, like why it would be important.
It's
but
a stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch. But this is going to get movie stuff? Cartoon stuff?
No, no, comics.
Comics.
Okay.
So revisiting the 2099.
Oh,
no, they did this recently, but Kirkman did it, and so it sucked. I
think probably the better way of looking at this is what they did with Marvel Knights. Donnie Cates did kind of a big series that sort of was a representation of those characters.
Yeah.
Maybe this one will end better.
I feel like 2099 is a universe that they probably could try out again.
Yeah,
Instead of being like a 6-issue minis or something, I would like them to do some more 2099 books. That seems like a sustainable universe.
If they had like two or three going on and didn't get nuts with it, I think it could be all right. Now that said, I don't have a huge affinity for it. The only one of them that I followed back in the day was The Odd Man Out, Ravage 2099.
Yeah, well, we need more future garbage men.
If I'm not mistaken,
right now, I'll take
he started out as like some kind of like, I don't know, hedge fund guy or something like
that. He was an executive at the like the garbage corporation, which was like
I thought it was like at Roxxon or something.
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But basically he turned on the evil corporation when he found out they were polluting things, and got himself an old school garbage truck that like plowed through all the future plastic houses and tech and took it to the man.
And then eventually he became a beast man.
Right. Actually I think that happened kinda early on.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah, he kinda got dark manned up.
Okay. Yep.
Anyway, it was not the shining star, the crown jewel in there, but it was plotted or at least written by Stan Lee early on. But the better known ones were like, Spider-Man 2099, X-Men 2099, Doom 2099, and...
Hulk and Punisher.
Hulk and Punisher,
those all came around, and Ghost Rider 2099 for early Chris Bacallo art. There was good stuff in there.
Should they get Warren Ellis to rethink this?
Warren Ellis did Doom 2099.
Yeah, that's right.
He did a rethink of it in the middle of it. I don't know, I don't want Warren Ellis. I want people who are going to enjoy the fun of, like, superhero universe.
Right, right.
You know? Tom Taylor
would be amazing.
Tom Taylor and Donny Cates and some other dudes.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I could potentially be down for it. Although I did not kind of come in on it back in the 90s, I've seen bits and pieces of it, and I've seen how they've tied it into other series, and I've mostly... I do think it's a kind of neat future. I wouldn't mind seeing it slightly reconceptualized.
Marvel also teased something to do with Annihilation.
Yeah, this was a straight-up tease. It was basically just an image of Annihilus.
Right? Yeah.
Right, for those who do not know, Annihilation was a big cosmic miniseries, what, like 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah,
there were two of them.
That would pave the way for a Guardians of the Galaxy series, and that Guardians of the Galaxy series was the basis, basically, for the movie.
Yeah. Yep. It redefined Marvel's space stuff.
Yeah,
and there was Annihilation, and then it's had its sequel, Annihilation Conquest.
The big brainchild of like Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, but with other partners in there like Keith Giffen and stuff too.
I have memories of reading that first issue of Annihilation Conquest and getting to that kind of last end reveal of the first issue, and it's like, holy shit!
Yeah, there was some great stuff.
It was Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest were both really good reads. Reminded me of all the stuff I liked about Marvel's Cosmic Universe, and I felt like it took like sort of Jim Starlin, Thanos' creator, his cosmic sort of universe, pulled it into the 2000s in a really cool way, and so if they're doing something else with that, and that means Cosmic Universe is going to take front and center, I'm definitely down for it.
Yeah,
this has got to be Donny Cates, right?
We don't know anything about it yet.
No, but I mean, he's been kind of heralding all the cosmic stuff in Marvel
now. It's true. Silver Surfer, Guardians. He did Thanos. He did Cosmic Ghost Rider.
He's essentially done Venom
Venom. Yeah, had like the symbiote god Null is in Silver Surfer. So yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but man, it like completely lines up.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, I would expect him to have a large role in it, even if it's not just him.
And there's a few DC things. Superman smashes the Klan.
Oh, right. This was, wasn't this from taken from, like, an old 40s radio play or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
And it's Jean Yuan Jean Lang?
Jean Lang, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, like, literally Superman versus, like, the KKK.
Yeah.
Which,
weirdly, is controversial in modern-day America.
Right. I'm sure there's good folks that Superman's about to punch right in the face. And I will be cheering him on.
Yep.
Yeah, this is, I think, I saw some... is it an animated thing they're doing?
No, it's a series.
Okay, I just saw the art for it, and I remember it had an animated style look to it.
It's Guru, who... the guys who did the Power Pack stuff.
Yeah, yeah, super, super awesome cartoonists.
Yep.
It seems right to take the beacon of American truth and justice and really firmly have him beat down on some racists.
Agreed.
I couldn't imagine. And I do think, like, I saw, like, they have, like, robots and stuff. It is a elevated Superman-type story. He's not just literally walking into their meeting and grinding him into a pulp. That'd be satisfying in its own way.
It would.
But he's got to beat up their robots first.
I'm okay with that.
They also announced two new Black Label series from Jeff Lemire.
Two?
Joker, Killer Smile with Andrea Sorrentino, with whom he does
Gideon Falls.
Which I don't really like, but I like that book. I don't like Andrea Sorrentino's art very much, but I've come around on that, and maybe I'll like it on the Joker.
Right.
But it's...
What's interesting is, like, normally I would not want any really Joker book at all.
Yeah, right.
I've just been, like, kind of burned out on him. It seems a little... I think especially with, like, all the shootings and stuff that have been going on, kind of glorifying somebody who's, like, their most murderous dude in the DC universe. just does not feel fun anymore.
It leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, but it's Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, what if there was a story wherein he was torturing a psychologist?
Is that what it's about?
Yeah, it's a upending like of an Arkham mental health professional. Mm-hmm.
I really would like, because Lemire kind of, he has a dark streak in almost all of his works.
Yep.
But it is not a nihilistic streak. He's not a super torture-y guy. He will go to some dark places, but I have a feeling he will have a story to tell that will not be just about glorifying the Joker.
Yeah.
And so, tentatively, like, I don't know if I really want to read it, but I would check it out because of him.
Yeah.
And then there's the question, The Deaths of Vic Sage, which teams Lemire with Dennis Cohen and Bill Sienkiewicz, the guys who wrote.
Cool.
And this is a version of the question who dies and is reincarnated over and over again in the Hub City.
That's weird. I wonder if it'll be... Is that a complete rethink? Because he did have ties to some mystical stuff.
It sounds like what they're going to do is they're going to go back to the Ditko version, and then they're going to show maybe the Denny O'Neill version, and they're going to... The idea is that this character sort of reincarnates.
Right. I wonder if that means that they'll also even acknowledge the Justice League Unlimited, you know, super fun conspiracy theory version.
Yeah. I'm interested in that one.
Yeah. That's an awesome art team on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, this seems like it's fun up Lemire's alley. Gideon Falls has some fun conspiracy stuff, so if it's anything sort of like the way that the conspiratorial things play out through that, I could see that being a kind of a cool driving force for it.
Yeah. Then John Carpenter is writing a Joker one-shot for DC, also I believe in Black Label.
Yeah.
I want to be excited about this, but... Carpenter hasn't made a good movie in a while.
Sad truth is, yeah, John Carpenter will always have my faith and devotion to him as a person.
Absolutely.
But to his creative projects, I haven't really seen anything I liked since the 90s.
What if he does something about how Joker's the same one and we're all crazy?
Whoa. You just blew my mind. I hope that's what he's doing.
I think, Dave, you and I both have the same skepticism here, which is basically that all these Hollywood guys come and they're like, they do a thing they feel like nobody's ever done. In fact, 100 people have already done it.
Right. Like somebody will come in off of a TV show there and they'll be like, what do you think would be like if a superhero had to deal with middle age?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I remember when Frank Miller first did that in 1986. And then everybody else did it for the next ever. And it just happens a lot. So yeah, I don't know that John Carpenter will have anything insightful to do with the Joker. But for his sake, and for all our sakes, I hope he does.
Me too.
We'll always have The Thing and The Fog and all the other ones.
What if it's just a one-shot that has Joker visiting all of his movies?
If Roddy Piper takes him out...
that would be the finale one. Like, he would go see The Fog.
No,
I have come here to kick clowns and chew bubble gum.
He doesn't take him out. There's an extended... like 30 page alley fight between the Joker and Roddy Piper in which he's like, put on the glasses.
I'd read that.
Alright, that's news for this week. We got lots more. We'll save some from next week. You guys don't get it all this week. Don't be so greedy.
Easy.
We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking Comics Week of Wednesday, July 31st. It is a fifth week, which means it's kind of a slower week.
Right. Well, yeah, when we pull subscribers, we print out a certain number of pages and we pull all the subscribers first. And a lot of times it's like 19 or 20 subs.
It's usually between 19 to 22 pages.
Yep. This week it was 13 pages.
That's pretty low.
It's just literally a smaller number of titles.
Yep.
But there's still some winners in there.
There is. There's a couple annuals from DC. There's some new books. Marvel.
Cullen Bunn
stuff.
Is writing his heart out, and he has two books out this week, one of which is my pick. All right. And of course, a huge release from Marvel.
Yep.
Following their huge release last week.
You mean Death's Head?
Of course I mean Death's Head.
Nick, why don't you talk about Marvel's big release this week?
Okay, I'm going to talk about Powers of Ten, which is its actual name.
Not Powers of X.
No, but if you want to call it Powers of X, we won't yell at you.
No, we're not going to yell at you.
But last week's was House of X.
It is House of X.
Not House of X, Powers of Ten.
This Powers of Ten actually does make sense because Hickman does actually use the Powers of Ten in the actual book.
Referencing do people even know about that old film anymore that used to be shown to every school kid where they zoom in on a microscope and then zoom out through past all the solar system and galaxies and stuff?
I don't think they do anymore.
I don't know about this.
It's an award-winning film called Powers of Ten that came out in like the 1960s. The opening of the movie Contact was very much an homage to it, where it was originally a series of photographs, and in each one they zoomed out a one power of ten greater. So it's like, first of all, you know, you're like looking at some people in a parking lot, and then you're up in the sky over that, and then you see the Earth, and then you see the solar system, and it keeps on sweeping out until you see hundreds of galaxies, and you know, you see galactic clusters and all that stuff.
And then
stuff.
It's all inside a marble that an alien kid is playing with. So that's the end of Men in Black.
Yeah. Men in Black was itself kind of doing a little nod to it. And this does that by jumping to different sort of eras.
Yeah, eras of the X-Men, starting with year one, which is labeled the Dream.
Like the founding of the X-Men?
Yep. Year 10, which is the World, which is what we're seeing in House of X.
Kind of the present, right? Well,
like, yeah.
That is a weird compression that it has been, that we've, there are 80 years of Marvel Comics, no, not 80 years, 50, 60 years of Marvel compressed into 10 years. Weird.
It's a little weird.
It doesn't seem that weird to me because I just kind of, there's so many of those stories you can kind of brush away.
Yeah. I guess. That's a lot.
Then there's,
I mean, unless you want characters to age and die.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just saying that like Cyclops and Jean Grey and all those guys happened, were kids, grew up, became Phoenix, died, came back, got married, got divorced, got unmarried. There's a Goblin Queen in there somewhere. There's a lot to happen in 10 years is my point. They did this to Batman in the New 52 and I hated it.
Yeah.
You know, it actually doesn't seem that weird to me. The characters are still look like they're around 30 for the most part. So, yeah, you just kind of like phase out certain events and keep the big ones.
And I guess he wanted to keep with the X equals 10.
Yep.
I'm just saying, why couldn't the book have been called Powers of XX or Powers of XXX? Wait, I understand why that wouldn't work.
Then there's year 100, which is labeled the War, and year 1000, which is the Ascension. And throughout this issue, we get a glimpse of all of those years.
So just to double check, founding of X-Men, intercut with kind of present day X-Men,
present day.
Intercut with 100 years in the future, intercut with 1000 years in the future.
Yes.
Got it.
And there's sort of different eras and different glimpses of what those eras mean to mutants. And it's everything from weird sentinels, and there's a version of Nimrod, which regardless of
the ultimate death sentinel?
Yeah, he was a scary sentinel. To sort of the godlike overlords of the year 1000, and
this does feel very Grant Morrison in the sense that he did that DC 1 million project.
Yeah.
And likes the kind of like wild future ride stuff.
Yeah. All sort of interspliced with some more infographics and things about gene splicing. And
I was going to say, you said interspliced, and that seems very appropriate because this has to do with,
it's about a mutant breeding program.
Yeah.
And like chimeras and outliers.
Yeah,
and
chimera meaning that like you take two mutants, you put them together, and you have the offspring is going to have some element of both of their powers.
Yeah.
And then, like, what if you, then if sort of two of them are sort of mated, I guess is the weird way to put it, but
then if you splice five different X genes together, what do you get?
Right.
And
now, I have not read all of this, but I do know that there's a character that everybody's been wondering about that was on the cover and on all the posters that looked like, oh, that, like, part Nightcrawler, part Colossus, part Magic,
yep.
And that she is surely from that program, right?
Yep, she is definitely, you actually even see her sample DNA.
I have a question for you, Nick.
Yeah.
Is there a figurehead character that's the main perspective of like the reader, or is this kind of like really kind of telling its story with sort of a mosaic of like different?
It's a little bit mosaic, but there's a quote on the first page that, here's the thing, Charles, it's not a dream. If it's real, and it's labeled Moira McTaggart.
Right.
And she is kind of not like central, but she's definitely in the first couple of pages. And she knows more than she's letting on, so
yeah, there's this, I did read the opening, and there's a kind of a surreal scene where she bumps into him at, like, is it like a circus or something
like
that?
Yeah, it's like a carnival kind of thing.
Right, and she's kind of weirded out, like, she's like, this is not actually a happy place behind the scenes, and he's in this good mood for some reason. Oh, I think, is it because he's decided to do with his X-Men?
Yeah, he's decided to create the X-Men.
To create the X-Men. But then when she starts talking to him, he suddenly realizes she knows who he is,
yeah.
And clearly, I don't know, if not has an agenda, like, the meeting was no chance.
Exactly. So,
Moira's never, by the way, been revealed to be, like, evil or anything, has
no,
she?
No, I don't think so.
No.
She's always been his steadfast Scottish buddy and occasionally
and mother
buddy.
To his crazy son.
Yeah.
No, that's Gabrielle Haller.
Oh, that's true.
That's right.
Moira McTaggart had a kid by means of Kevin McAllister. Not Kevin McAllister.
I was like,
that's Home Alone.
I was Kevin, like, wait a
Kevin
minute.
Kevin McTaggart, maybe?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about her.
Isn't her name Maura McTaggart?
Yeah, it is.
That was her married name. So yeah, she had she had an abusive husband, and he was the guy who gave birth to Proteus.
Okay.
Gave her. She got pregnant and gave birth to Proteus. He didn't give birth to Proteus. Kevin McAllister from Home Alone slept with Maura McTaggart.
Yes.
And they had a son named Proteus.
Kevin!
And they left him home alone, and he tried to kill the X-Men and Colossus stopped him.
I forgot about Dre. So we've got multiple characters going on. Moira McTaggart with a somewhat central role.
Yep. And Xavier plays a central role, and then you sort of go into the other eras, and you see through lines of stuff, but it is sort of an explanation of how the X-Men kind of mutate and change in each era.
That's interesting. Is there a suggestion of, like, sort of, like, because, like, if Mr. Sinister or whatever had this, like, breeding program or whatever, was it, like, known? In other words, does he, like, win in the future?
It's almost like he was working with mutant kind.
Oh, okay.
And, like, trying to help them for some reason.
Okay. Because I thought there was something in the first issue about, like, the human race was on the verge of extinction or whatever within a few generations.
But something obviously changed.
Interesting.
In this era. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. It is a puzzle box. I'll still be kind of puzzling through this a little bit.
I have seen, like, maybe we should even post these on Facebook, but there's been some interesting, like, footnotes and annotations
to it.
I've seen in a lot of places where I'm like, oh, that's a deep catch that I would not have caught myself. I have another weird question. There's, like, a checklist of how the issues interrelate later on in
it.
And a few of them, the lines are highlighted in red. Do we know what that red means?
The red means something big happens.
Okay. Because there was, like, a piece of art on the very next page of that had that exact same tinge of red.
Yep.
And it was, like, from another part of his infographics that had, like, the language of Krakoa, the mutant language thing.
Yeah, something big happens in House of X2, which is next week.
Okay.
And then what's interesting is that it's not going to be the same in House of X and Powers of X each week. Sometimes it'll be House of X, and then the following week will be another House of X.
Hickman, you're so crazy.
So weird. He's playing with sort of reading orders and things like that, too. So
it sounds a little almost not quite the same, but like the same way Alan Moore was playing with the formal aspects of Watchmen when he wrote it, where there's like an issue that literally has the mirror pages Rorschach style and all that stuff.
So he's taking ideas of X-Men and just kind of creating his own world a little bit.
But will it feel like the X-Men when he is done?
That is my ultimate question. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really enjoying what it, like, the kind of, I get to study it and research it, and I love that aspect of comics.
Right, it's sort of a little bit of a mystery in this sense. But yeah, nobody knows what the picture, how it's going to clarify at the end.
But Cyclops doesn't show up and fire optic blasts and things like that.
Right, I was a little bit lamenting that it's not the, like, I don't see front and center the characters I know and love and want to always see.
Right.
But they are, it's not like they're absent from it, but there's not sort of a center stage group.
And the comic is definitely not missing action. There's actually some pretty awesome action drawn by Arby Silva, who I don't remember where he's from, but...
No, he's worked on X-Men books before.
He's extremely talented, and I really like his character work.
It sort of makes sense that these first two issues are sort of foundational, and then the issue two of, is it House of X?
Yes, House of X.
House of X is where something big will go down to kind of like really, I guess, jumpstart catapult the series.
Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is a horror book from Cullen Bunn for Dark Horse Comics called Manor Black. Like, you know, like a manor, like an estate.
Yep.
Black like the color.
Black like the color. Is that the name of the family?
Yes,
is that their family name
is.
In it? And it sort of begins in a very sort of cinematic style with this... group of people that are like in a sort of like a maybe looks like an old van or whatever that are being chased by somebody down a darkened road, and they're like driving wildly. There's something, some ritual that they feel that they need to do as fast as it can, and one or two of them are injured.
It looks like they just pulled a heist of some sort.
Okay, yeah. And then they see this mysterious figure in the road, this kind of creepy bandaged figure, swerve to avoid him, crash badly. And go down it like a hill. And then when we return to them in a little while, we'll see there's something kind of particularly weird about their crash. Actually, I guess I'll go ahead and say it. Like, There was a fire that burned around him, and they're found dead inside. But the fire burned in this like perfect circle, almost, that went out about 10 feet from the van, and then stopped. So the part of this issue is told from the perspective of is he the sheriff, Nick, or like just police?
Sheriff of the town.
Yeah, sheriff of this I guess a small town, and he they realize something strange may be up. Then we see the manor in question, where sort of the patriarch of the family, and I believe his adopted son, are talking and planning. It's clear that the patriarch has the kind of the future of the family on his mind, and you know that there's weird supernatural stuff afoot when he goes down below the estate into these like a crypt, I guess, because there's like, what do you call it when there's like the
mausoleum.
Like a mausoleum, yeah. And there's all sorts of weird stuff in there. There's like a giant sort of hourglass that looks to be half filled with blood. And when he touches it, and he says, and when I say the giant hourglass, I mean it's like, looks like it could be like 12 feet tall or 20 feet tall.
Yeah, it's like a size of, as tall as a room.
Yeah, and he touches it and he says, mumbling to himself, he says, nearly 200 years, and it's still not enough. So whatever creepy ritual they've been doing has been going on a long time. And then he carries on a conversation with his fellow family members, who all seem to be, would you say, dead, Nick?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like they're in varying stages of decay, sitting around talking to him.
They're ghosts or corpses.
Yeah.
It kind of is like, once you die in this family, you don't rest.
Yep.
You sort of live on.
And there's a few people that goes a ways back. Like, one of them has like one of those Victorian ruff collars that are like straight up like ghosts, it looks like.
Yep.
Kind of glowing red ghosts. Oh, man, I have to quick say, since we're at this point in it, the art is really stunning. It's for the same guy who did Harrow County with him, Tyler Crook.
Tyler Crook.
Oh, man, it's so amazing looking.
And some Six Gun.
Yeah, the art in this throughout is fantastic. Anybody who's seen Harrow County has a sense of how good it looks. But yeah, they are clearly charting out the sort of supernatural future of this family, which I think from like what I read, maybe in the preview or in the solicit, might have been a family of warlocks, essentially, you know, kind of black magic practitioners. Nick, would you say, like, the vibe I got from the solicit was that that patriarch, the old man, might be trying to sort of break out of the family's sort of evil line or whatever?
It's interesting. I hadn't considered that, because mainly what I read from it is, like, he's trying to choose a successor.
Right.
The
solicit seemed to suggest that the successor, the new kid that he was raising, might be some rather different from anybody else in the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, he may be, like, we need to change what we're doing.
Right.
Now, exactly why, and whether he has, like, really good motivations or just, like, some sort of selfish motivation of his own, that's all the big mystery. But it's intercut with the sort of police work around the crash, which is a lot of fun. Some cool, just weird stuff. Hands bleeding blood that just kind of rises up into the atmosphere as if gravity was pulling it upward. A strange, what do you call that, spontaneous combustion act. All sorts of, this is a very mysterious first issue.
Colin does really good quiet horror in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's like sort of suspense horror.
Yeah.
So it's not like quite bone-chilling horror. He kind of likes monsters and spells and things like that a little bit more than he does like slow creeping down corridors and things like that. Like, he's not necessarily looking to scare you, but he's looking to take you to an eerie place, and a place where like kind of dark magic and creatures are the norm. I always remember in Harrow County, there was a persistent thing with someone's skin husk that was like taken in by the girl, I think, in the early issues, and like kept in a drawer. And it was like kind of darkly comedic sometimes, but like also serious. Anyway, I thought this was an excellent first issue. I actually don't know, is this an ongoing or a miniseries?
It's got to be a miniseries, right?
It doesn't say many up the top. It says just true number one. So
I mean, he doesn't do like fully unlimited series.
Yeah, maybe like 12 issues or something.
Yeah.
I forgot, there's also a quote from Patton Oswalt on the cover that suggests more humor in it than I think I saw in the first issue, but knowing some of the dark humor of him, maybe there's more to come. He says, a soapy, eerie new comic that delivers as many laughs as it does jolts, often at the same time. Patton Oswalt is a pretty good judge of quality. So if not for me, check it out for Patton.
Do it for Patton.
And I, of course, I mean General Patton.
Yes.
Randy, what have you this week?
I thought you meant character actor Will Patton.
I love Will Patton.
Yeah, Will Patton's great. I have Conan the Barbarian number 8. I did not pick a number 1 this week, unlike my two compatriots.
Yep.
I'm really liking this series. This is it's part 8 of The Life and Death of Conan, which is weird branding because Jason Aaron's Conan story has been basically all standalones. Huh. It's just that they're all jumping around in time, and they all are leading into this one thing we've seen, which is like King Conan being kidnapped by a witch that he met early on in his life, and maybe she's going to end his life.
Right. Structurally, it's not unlike the God Butcher story that began his Thor run, which had glimpses of Thor when he was like a young Turk back in like medieval times, Thor in the present, and Thor in the future when he was sort of in the Odin role.
But these are all basically standalone books, and there'll be one little bit at the end is like, oh, and by the way, remember that witch who has him in the future? We haven't forgotten about her.
Right.
But
I wonder if we'll also find out there were ties we didn't know about going on in this story.
This particular issue finds a Conan in sort of a, I would say, middle age. He's not yet a king. It's his first return to Sumeria.
Uh-huh.
He goes home and discovers that one of his enemies has ensorcelled his entire village, including all his old friends, his first girlfriend, his grandmother, and he sort of has to fight his way through that.
Ensorcelled?
How
are they ensorcelled?
They're ensorcelled. I don't know, man.
Like, are they like zombies? Or
they're zombie-ish, yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a really good story. It's Conan versus wizards, which, of course, he always hates wizards. It's got really nice art by Jorge Zaffino, or Gerardo Zaffino.
Okay.
And it's another just good issue of Conan from Jason Aaron. I'm really digging what he does with this book.
So you're, in effect, also recommending the whole series, which I believe just got a trade,
first
second trade?
Issues 1 through 5 or 1 through 6.
Yeah, kind of recently. So yeah, check that out.
Also on my stack this week, Runaways number 23, which continues to be... I'm amazed this book is still going because it's such a niche book, but I really, really like it. Killers number 1, which is the new iteration of Ninjak. It's several ninjas over at Valiant. And then a new Death's Head book by Teenie Howard and Kay Zama, which I know we were all super excited to see. The poster looks great.
Right, that's the old British character, from the Marvel UK character.
Yep.
That was the essentially like robot bounty hunter from space with the quirky weird personality. Yep.
And then Fantastic Four number 12, which has Ben Grimm and Alicia Masters. I almost said Alicia Keys. Ben Grimm and Alicia Masters going on their honeymoon.
Kevin McAllister, Alicia Keys, and Ben Grimm.
Yes. There's some kind of deal where I think he gets maybe 2 weeks a year where he is...
human?
He's human, yeah. So he's about to go on this honeymoon with his wife and be human for 2 weeks. He's got about 2 minutes left, and the Hulk swims ashore. And I won't say why, but the Hulk is spoiling for a fight. So it's got a classic thing, Hulk fight. And then Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 9... which is more of Tom Taylor's Spider-Man, and I like Tom Taylor's Spider-Man, so that's all I've got. Dave, what else on your stack?
The only other thing that I wanted to mention this week was one of those DC books. They've been doing a lot of books for kids or young adult readers. This one is for pretty young readers, I think. They say it's from a New York Times bestselling author, Michael Northrup. I don't know who that is, but he's apparently a dude.
Yeah.
It's called Dear Justice League. And this is like a little graphic novel for kids. Like, it's sort of in the digest format. Really beautifully cartooned. It reminds me of some of that... what were those DC animated shorts that they did?
Just DC shorts is what they're called, weren't they?
It was like the DC Universe or whatever that thing was. Anyway,
DC Short Treks.
Yeah, DC Short Treks. So this is... there is a linking story about sort of an alien invasion. But the real story is the big heroes of DC... answering like text or emails from kids, and it's super fun. The very first one is there's a kid who's run over the sprinkler in his yard with his lawnmower and clearly like wrecked the lawnmower and the sprinkler. Mm-hmm. And you see he is texting Superman, "Dear Superman, you're super, right? I mean, it's right there in your name, but are you super all the time? What I mean is, have you ever messed up? I mean big time, because I have big time. Your non-super fan, Ben Silsby." And I'm just going to quick tell you what happens in this first thing. Superman's wondering, thinking about it when he, and reading this text, when he accidentally, like, clunks into a building not like badly, but you see, well, he's kind of shaking it off, and he's like, oh, man, I need to go pay attention to the alien stuff going on. But like a window washer on the other side, it kind of jostles him, and that guy, like, takes a tumble, but Superman catches him, but his bucket nearly, like, falls and makes somebody else bump into somebody else, and it triggers this chain of events that's a really comedic sort of physical comedy thing, to the point where they even, like, do this overhead map showing the entire city with, like, a series of lines showing how the accident traveled around the city.
I like that.
When you get to the end of it, you see Superman gets, is getting a write-up from a cop, and I'll tell you what for in a minute. And Superman responds back to the kid, "Dear Ben, thank you for writing. You wanted to know if I've ever messed up. I don't want to go into too much detail. Where would I begin?
My whole planet blow up."
He's like, "But the short answer is yes, big time." And you see that the cop has written him a infraction ticket for texting while flying. Anyway, it's very fun. Like, I can't get over how, like, really nice the artwork is in this. And, like, it's not all super big characters, too. There's an awesome one with Hawkwoman, or is it Hawkwoman or Hawkgirl these days? Hawkgirl. In there. And the awesome email she gets is somebody who asks, "Dear Hawkgirl, hawks eat small mammals. Do you?" Which is followed by her. She looks, she's got, like, a gerbil in a cage, and it's running in its treadmill. And she, like, looks at it, and it has this, like, "Who, me?" kind of look. It's just, the cartooning is really adorable, and it has kind of a Pixar, Disney sort of look to it. Anyway, a lot of fun from what I've read. I think your kids out there are going to like it. Nick, what else? Anything else?
Just two more. The final issue of Batman Who Laughs, the Scott Snyder Jock book.
This is, like, the additional final issue, right?
It is the additional final issue. So, if you have been enjoying that series, there's that to conclude it. And then the second issue of Batman Last Night on Earth, which is Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's sort of final story of Batman, set in kind of post-apocalyptic world where Batman is trying to get back to Gotham City and figure out what the heck is going on.
All right, that's Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk about some comics, and some comics, some movies, some TV, a bunch of stuff. You should come back for that. Alright, so it has been a little while, but we were not podcasting for a little while, and we have never told you all our thoughts about Spider-Man Far From Home.
It stinks.
That's not our thoughts.
Oh, that's true. That's
it could true. Be Dave's thoughts. I don't
so,
know.
As background, I did not love
Homecoming.
I thought it was super well made, but was a little too different from my Spider-Man that I grew up with, who was not beholden to a millionaire in an armored suit who handed him technology.
Except for the millionaire in armored suit, the hand of technology that is the United States government where he lives.
What are we talking about?
Metaphorically, he is beholden to the millionaire in iron suit that gives him technology. He is.
You talking about job creator, Tony Stark? Talk about trickle down?
No, actually, I was going the other way. I was going to say that we're all beholden to millionaires with technology.
Yeah, that's true. It's working out well.
Yeah,
though. Yeah. No, and you know, I did not want to see Uncle Ben get shot again, but I was just hoping for a little bit more traditional on that front. But I thought it was really well made, and in fact, the differences in Homecoming did make it exciting. And now that I've kind of I've taken it in.
Yep.
I had such a good time with Far From Home.
Yeah. I also was a little skeptical of Far From Home. By the way, we should say, we're going to do spoilers. If you've not seen Far From Home yet...
Get out!
You come back later.
Yeah. We generally liked it. You should go see it.
Yeah. I did not love Homecoming as much as most, although I did come around on it later when I watched it more. And wound up, it went up in my estimation more than it did for you, I think, Dave. Yeah. And Nick, I believe you really liked Homecoming.
I did. I really enjoyed Homecoming.
But would you say we all liked Far From Home better than Homecoming?
Yeah. I actually think Far From Home is my favorite Spider-Man film.
It was very energetic, I gotta say. Like,
it's great.
The pacing was just on in it, and like their musical choices of kind of the oddball pop musics of all the places throughout Europe that it goes to. As well as that sense of, like, where is this going? There's surprise around every turn.
Yep.
From the beginning when he is willed a pair of super high-tech, plugged into all Stark tech glasses, which controls stuff as crazy as, like, drone strike satellites.
Yes.
And he like accidentally almost drone strikes
a fellow classmate.
Was it Flash? No, it's the other guy with the crush on Mary Jane, which, let's be honest, we've all been there. We've all wanted to drone strike somebody. Yeah. It's just that Peter had glasses.
We all want to drone strike somebody every day.
Also, the other big is this, of course, Mysterio played mysteriously on the trailers where they made him look like a hero from another world.
Yep.
And we were all like, wow, we all know he's a charlatan. But is he? Or is Marvel opening up some alternate universe stuff? And he's not.
It was a good fake out.
It was a good fake out. As it happens, he's a charlatan.
He's a charlatan.
But a charlatan with a neat bit of Marvel history to bring into him to make it... The reveal was extra cool when you found out that he was a sort of disgruntled Stark guy who had pulled in other people, some of which we had seen in previous movies.
There's just a curiosity. I don't want to go to Anna here, where I'm going to advocate for Tony Stark to get the guillotine.
Right.
As our staffer, Anna often does.
Yeah.
But
she makes a convincing case
looking at how much... damage, collateral damage Tony Stark has done. How many villains have come out of Tony Stark?
Well, wasn't one of those villains working for Obadiah Stane, which is a villain in himself, and like he was yelling at him, like was the one browbeating him?
Was he?
I think it was. So okay. I can't really condemn Tony Stark completely.
I'm just saying, this is like all the Stark castoffs working for a bad guy because they're like, Tony Stark's a jerk who doesn't care about his employees.
Yeah. Yeah, the filmmakers may be making commentary on capitalism.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a good idea for a villain, though.
But I also am always been one who, in the comics, I'm like, I was like, okay, yeah, Hank Pym in the comics, you know, inadvertently created Ultron. I don't generally think Hank Pym is a terrible person for having done that. I think, well, a writer wanted a big melodramatic story and did that. And yeah, it's part of his character now, but I don't think of him as like a monster. Because the story's never really wanted to portray him as such.
Right.
Yeah. I do really like... I like the mentor relationship that Tony had with Spider-Man.
Continues on.
They deepened that in Infinity War and Endgame quite a bit.
Through Happy. I was just going to say, Happy kind of continues.
Yeah. But not even that, but... the Edith, the even dead on the hero, the glasses that he gives him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about whether or not Peter can live up to Tony's legacy. This, in the same way... that Homecoming was about whether or not Peter was going to be an Avenger and be like a mini Iron Man, or whether he was going to be his own hometown hero. This is kind of about, is he going to be Tony's protege, or is he going to be his own man?
Yeah.
And so it carries that forward. And beyond just what it means for him as Spider-Man, there's also the thing of whether it's going to be for Peter and Mary Jane and how their relationship's going to move forward and that kind of thing.
And I found that propelled the story forward in fun ways, too. It's kind of tough to do that young love stuff and like not have it sort of feel trite.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, like it's honestly a little bit painful in the Raimi movies because they always wanted to focus on what a luckless loser he was.
Yeah.
But you know, here although there was some hilarious stuff like early on with that on the plane.
Yeah.
And also with Ned, who's like, don't worry about girls. We'll just have guy fun.
Ned and Betty's romance is so good.
It's almost sitcom-y,
but
it was so well done and so funny that like I had to forgive it. And that's just that's how that kind of stuff works. I will forgive stupid stuff if it's well done.
Yep.
But then they do they actually move their relationship forward in very interesting ways, including having her sort of guess his identity.
Yes.
One of my favorite parts is, in fact, when, she guesses it, he confesses it, or she's starting to.
Yeah.
He confesses it, and she's like, what did you say? I was like 66%
sure.
66% sure. Yeah, that was great. But also, I was happy about that and about, because the hero having to hide the secret identity from the one he loves ends up being the most frustrating trope for me.
It does.
Yeah.
And I hate to agree with Bendis on anything, as you know.
Yeah.
But he may be right about secret identities. It may be. Think looking at this Marvel Cinematic Universe, there aren't any.
Well,
right?
Especially now.
Especially not now. Like, there aren't secret identities. I think they're, for the most part, everybody knows who people are, and that's one of the big reveals at the end of this one is, that Peter... Hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Although it could be done after InfoWars, J. Jonah Jameson ratted him out.
Yep.
An amazing cameo.
Yes, so I guess good.
Once you have the best J. Jonah Jameson, you don't get rid of him.
Yeah.
You just change up the tone.
Just change up the tone, yeah. It does mean I can't really forgive JJJ now. He's a permanent enemy of me. But
J.K. Simmons is amazing.
Yeah.
And,
What are we talking about?
Well, there's also the scroll reveals. I'm talking about the end credits.
Yeah, sure. Which actually kind of opens up its own box of mysteries. Like, how long has that been going on? Yeah. Fury off world?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did he seem like he was vacationing, basically?
Yeah. He did seem like he was vacationing.
He basically took some time off after Endgame.
Okay. Yeah, and that sort of makes sense. He'd been through a lot.
And Talos and his...
Although maybe he hadn't been. He disappeared the 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Spider-Man recasting the very grimdark disappearance of a 5-year disappearance as the blip.
Yeah.
So that you kind of see it as it's reported, really, and kind of talked about amongst high schoolers.
Yeah.
Where it kind of instantly becomes a pop thing.
Yeah.
Was a super great idea. Like, I never would have thought to do that, but that was one of the many ways in which the movie surprised me.
That way, everything doesn't have to be as dark as Endgame.
Yeah, exactly. And it's only, like, in Endgame, it can still be dark, and if they want to talk about it in a more serious way in other contexts, they can. But in Peter's world, it was kind of taken the way teenagers would, which is, let's turn it into a meme, and let's, like...
This is weird, but...
Yeah, what are you gonna do, but go on?
By the way, Martin Starr is an underrated. He plays their debate coach.
Yeah,
he is underrated.
Am I wrong? He was playing the same character in Incredible Hulk.
You could be wrong. I don't know.
I thought he was that same character, and Kevin Feige said that it was the same person.
I don't know. I don't remember him from
Incredible Hulk. He showed up in the
Edward Norton one. Wait.
I think he was working.
There's stuff on campus in there, but.
He was working with Samuel Stern. Or...
Oh, I did not know that.
That's possible.
But they also added J.B. Smoove as the other teacher who's like too quick to buy into all the crazy superstitions, magic.
Witchcraft.
And very ready to get out of there. And I love that actor, and I thought he was great in that little bit role.
Do y'all like the action and stuff?
The action was really good, yeah.
And Mysterio was...
his Peter Tingle?
Yeah, man. part of what's good about these is they are very legitimately funny.
Yeah.
Also, and the way that all the Marvel movies, the best ones, are legitimately funny.
I loved Happy. I love their use of Happy Hogan as, like, his mentor.
I feel like... I never would have guessed this before, but I was like, I think he could actually end up marrying Aunt May.
Yeah, the Happy Aunt May stuff. That is my one minor gripe, is that I wanted more Aunt May. There was not a lot of it. Because she wasn't on the trip or anything, she was in the beginning and the end, and she was great in every second she was in it.
Yeah, well,
but I would have loved a little more Aunt May.
Marissa Tomei is amazing.
Yeah.
So.
I've talked about this with y'all off mic, but I was very much amused that sexy Aunt Marissa Tomei was slightly knocked down a level in a very appropriate way with the ultimate mom jeans and, like, mom jacket.
Yeah. Also, I really loved the sequence of Peter building his own suit.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I think people have griped about is that he feels too beholden to Tony Stark. And I like that basically he had that suite of tools, and he did his own thing with it. He built his own thing. And yeah, it is also a passing of the torch because he played, you know, Happy Months on the AC/DC. But that I thought was such a great moment.
And the Led Zeppelin?
Yeah. So good. Peter's, I'm too young to get your pop culture references, and all the pop culture references I know are because I see old movies.
Yeah.
It never stops being funny to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I have accepted that this is the MCU version of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And the trade-off is that I get a Spider-Man where I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know what the tropes are because the tropes aren't all fully established. There's nothing set in stone.
Yeah, I don't know where you go with the next Spider-Man.
By the way, if they did want to put the genie back in the bottle of his identity, they do know Doctor Strange, and that's, like, the single best way to do it, probably.
So I hope at least once in the Marvel Universe.
I hope they don't. I hope they run with it.
I do, too.
Here's a question. Like, so you take Hawkeye. He was, like, government agent type guy, and, like, probably his farm. I bet nobody knows where he lives.
No.
But people could presumably track down Peter Parker and Aunt May at the drop of a hat, and they would be in danger from some of his villains. Do you think he's going to go, like, live at Avengers Tower?
Maybe, but here's the other thing you got to remember. He has Edith now. He has control of Tony Stark's entire, like, arsenal of technology and that kind of thing. He can protect people around him.
It's true. Well, and Edith can protect.
Edith can protect.
I was thinking that that would be a great way to do a cold opening on the next movie, which is immediately answer that concern by, like, having somebody, like, you know, like a lower-level Spider-Man villain
have the Scorpion from the first one try to do a hit on him.
Yeah,
and just get blown up by
drones. Get trapped. or even, like, it could be something like, you know, now that he's buddies with the Avengers, it's like, you know, like Thor shows up and, like, you know, cracks his head.
Yeah.
Actually, he throws off with the Guardians. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But anyway,
Captain America. No, wait.
It would actually make more sense, though, I think, story-wise, if it was that, yeah, Peter Parker / Stark Tech.
You know, one thing that's interesting, though, is that we don't know where we're going to see Spider-Man next.
No.
It was not announced on Phase 4.
Was this internet rumor mongering where they're like, you know, Tom Holland has signed on for like 9 Spider-Man movies or something?
I don't know. But here's the thing. Tom Holland's going to get older.
Yep.
I mean, it's not that they can't have an older Spider-Man, but it's going to change considerably.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think after the success of that Spider-Man video game that just came out recently showed a somewhat older Spider-Man, and certainly what we've seen in the Spider-Verse, it's like they're priming the audience to accept that.
Spider-Man, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, waiting in the wings at some point can be Miles Morales.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I really like this. I think it was a pretty spectacular outing.
Let's quick just say, was there anything you didn't like on any parts here?
The only gripe I wanted more Aunt May. I would have liked more Aunt May.
That is a weak gripe. Nick, you got anything better?
No.
Are the elemental villains a little lame?
Yeah. But that's okay because...
they're in service to another villain, which actually... I mean, Mysterio's scheme was pretty genius.
Yeah.
Right, and I still enjoyed watching him. In a weird way, this was one of those ones where the heroes kind of stood out more than the villains. And I think it's okay to do that sometimes and not have the villains just chewing scenery. Jake Gyllenhaal did a good job.
Jake Gyllenhaal's toast is pretty dang great. He gets to chew the scenery there.
I don't remember his toast. Oh, basically, like with the bad guys?
Once he got the glasses and he was all like... Raise a glass to Tony Stark.
Yeah, it was a great big reveal scene. It was kind of exciting and fun.
Well, and also just the scenes with him and Peter are great.
Yeah.
It makes you feel they're actually connecting.
There's a
weird
push-pull throughout the whole thing of, like, does he want to be... Is he trying to be friends? Is he trying to be friends, but he's, like, going to show him some tough love? Is he just a bad guy?
Yeah.
The movie plays with that a lot. I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I did too.
I don't have any really big issues with it either, I'm afraid. I think the closest I could come is like, yeah, what you said, the elemental villains, there's good stuff during those action sequences, but like as far as like memorable villains, they're not.
Yeah.
But I also think that's kind of what made the movie fun and unpredictable. And
by design, actually.
Is like the hero got to do interesting things, and I was like, I don't even know what these guys' motivation is, you know?
I'm just hopeful that Hydra Man shows up at some point later down the road.
I think that's probably all the Hydra Man we're going to get.
Hey, they did mention somebody who did get elemental power.
It is Morris Day. Not Morris Day.
Or no.
Morris Day at the time. Well, that's a lot of that.
Morris Day, Kevin McAllister, and Alicia Keys.
Isn't it Morris Beach?
Bench. Morris Bench.
To be fair, I do not know Hydra Man's secret identity. I know a lot of Marvel villains' stupid names, but I don't know that one.
So if I had gone with Morris Day, you would just roll with it.
I would have been like, ooh,
Hydra Man in the time.
Oh, wee.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up for the week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.